He sat in the warmth of her car. The motor popped and burbled. The mufflers ticked as they cooled. She leaned towards him, dipped the clutch, and shoved the gear shift into first so that she had room to get close, threaded an arm behind his head, and kissed him hard on the lips. "Goodbye, Reacher," she said. "I'm glad I got to know your name, at least." He kissed her back hard and long. "So, what's your name?" he asked. "Crystal," she said, and laughed. He laughed with her and lifted himself up and out of the car. She leaned across and pulled the door behind him, gunned the motor, and drove away. He stood by himself on the curb and watched her go. She turned in front of a hotel bus and was lost to sight. 3 months of his life disappeared with her, like the haze of her exhaust. 5 o'clock in the morning, 50 miles north of New York City, the CEO was lying in bed, wide awake, staring at the ceiling. It had just been painted. The whole house had just been painted. He had paid the decorators more than most of his employees earned in a year. Actually, he hadn't paid them. He had fudged their invoice through his office, and his company had paid them. The expense was hidden somewhere in the secret spreadsheet, part of a 7-figure total for buildings maintenance. A 7-figure total on the debit side of the accounts, pulling his business down like heavy cargo sinks a listing ship, like a straw breaks a camel's back. His name was Chester Stone. His father's name had been Chester Stone, and his grandfather's. His grandfather had established the business, back when a spreadsheet was called a ledger and written by hand with a pen. His grandfather's ledger had been heavy on the credit side. He had been a clockmaker who spotted the coming appeal of the cinema very early. He had used his expertise with gear wheels and intricate little mechanisms to build a projector. He had taken on board a partner who could get big lenses ground in Germany. Together they had dominated the market and made a fortune. The partner had died young with no heirs. Cinema had boomed from coast to coast. Hundreds of movie theaters, hundreds of projectors, then thousands, then tens of thousands, then sound, then CinemaScope. Big, big entries on the credit side of the ledger. Then television. Movie houses closing down, and the ones that stayed open hanging on to their old equipment until it fell apart. His father, Chester Stone II, taking control. Diversifying, looking at the appeal of home movies, 8mm projectors, clockwork cameras. The vivid era of Kodachrome. Zapruder. The new manufacturing plant. Big profits ticking up on the slow, wide tape of an early IBM mainframe. Then the movies coming back, his father dying, the young Chester Stone III at the helm, multiplexes everywhere, 4 projectors, 6, 12, 16, where there had been just 1 before. Then stereo, 5-channel, Dolby, Dolby Digital, wealth and success, marriage, the move to the mansion, the cars. Then video. 8mm home movies deader than the deadest thing that ever died. Then competition. Cutthroat bidding from new outfits in Germany and Japan and Korea and Taiwan, taking the multiplex business out from underneath him. The desperate search for anything to make out of small pieces of sheet metal and precision-cut gears. Anything at all. The ghastly realization that mechanical things were yesterday's things. The explosion of solid-state microchips, RAM, games consoles. Huge profits being made from things he had no idea how to manufacture. Big deficits piling up inside the silent software on his desktop machine. His wife stirred at his side. She blinked open her eyes and turned her head left and right, first to check the clock, and then to look at her husband. She saw his stare fixed on the ceiling. "Not sleeping?" she asked quietly. He made no reply. She looked away. Her name was Marilyn Stone. She had been married to Chester for a long time, Long enough to know she knew it all. She had no real details, no real proof, no inclusion, but she knew it all anyway. How could she not know? She had eyes and a brain. It was a long time since she'd seen her husband's products proudly displayed in any store. It was a long time since any multiplex owner had dined them in celebration of a big new order. And it was a long time since Chester had slept a whole night through. So she knew. But she didn't care. For richer, for poorer, was what she had said, and it was what she had meant. Rich had been good, but poorer could be good, too. Not that they would ever be poor, like some people are poor. Sell the damn house, liquidate the whole sorry mess, and they would still be way more comfortable than she had ever expected to be. They were still young. Well, not young, but not old either. Healthy. They had interests, they had each other. Chester was worth having. Gray, but still trim and firm and vigorous. She loved him. He loved her. And she was still worth having, she knew that. 40-something, but 29 in her head, still slim, still blonde, still exciting. Adventurous, still worth having in any old sense of the phrase. It was all going to be okay. Marilyn Stone breathed deeply and rolled over, pressed herself into the mattress, fell back to sleep. 5:30 in the morning, while her husband lay quietly beside her and stared at the ceiling. Reacher stood inside the departures terminal, breathing the canned air, his tan turning yellow in the fluorescence, listening to a dozen conversations in Spanish, checking a television monitor. New York was at the top of the list, as he had thought it would be. First flight of the day was Delta to La Guardia via Atlanta in half an hour. Second was Mexicana heading south. Third was United, also to La Guardia, but direct, leaving in an hour. He headed to the United ticket desk, asked about the price of a one-way ticket, nodded and walked away. He walked to the bathroom and stood in front of the mirror, pulled his cash roll from his pocket and assembled the price he had just been quoted from the smallest bills he had. Then he buttoned his shirt all the way up and smoothed his hair down with his palm, walked back out and over to the Delta counter. The ticket price was the same as United's. He knew it would be. It always is, somehow. He counted the money out, ones and tens and fives, and the counter girl took it all and straightened the bills and shuffled them into denominations. "Your name, sir?" she asked. "Truman," Reacher said. "Like the president." The girl looked blank. She was probably born overseas during Nixon's final days, maybe during Carter's first year. Reacher didn't care. He had been born overseas at the start of Kennedy's term. He wasn't about to say anything. Truman was ancient history to him, too. The girl typed the name into her console and the ticket printed out. She put it in a folder with a red and blue world on it, then she tore it straight back out. "I can check you in right now," she said. Reacher nodded. The problem with paying cash for an airline ticket, especially at Miami International, is the war on drugs. If he had swaggered up to the desk and pulled his roll of hundreds, the girl would have been obliged to tread on a small secret button on the floor under her counter. Then she would have fiddled with her keyboard until the police came in, left and right. The police would have seen a big rough guy with a tan and a big wad of cash and figured him for a courier straight off the bat. Their strategy is to chase the drugs for sure, but to chase the money too. They won't let you put it in the bank. They won't let you spend it without getting all concerned about it. They assume normal citizens use plastic cards for big purchases, especially for travel, especially at the airport desk 20 minutes before takeoff. And that assumption would lead to delay and hassle and paperwork, which were three things Reacher was always keen to avoid. So he had evolved a careful act. He made himself look like a guy who couldn't even get a credit card if he wanted one, like a down-on-his-luck insolvent roughneck. Buttoning the shirt and carefully fingering the small bills were what did it. It gave him a shy, embarrassed look. It put the counter clerks on his side. They were all underpaid and struggling with their own maxed-out plastic, so they looked up and saw a guy just a little farther down the road than they were, and sympathy was their instinctive reaction, not suspicion.
"Gate B6, sir," the girl said. "I've given you a window."
"Thanks," Beecher said. He walked to the gate, and 15 minutes later was accelerating down the runway with pretty much the same feeling as being back in Crystal's Porsche, except he had a lot less legroom, and the seat next to him was empty. Chester Stone gave it up at 6 o'clock. He shut off the alarm half an hour before it was due to sound and slid out of bed quietly so as not to wake Marilyn. He took his robe from the hook and padded out of the bedroom and downstairs to the kitchen. His stomach was too acid to contemplate breakfast, so he made do with coffee and headed for the shower in the guest suite where it didn't matter if he made a noise. He wanted to let Marilyn sleep, and he didn't want her to know that he couldn't. Every night she woke and made some comment about him lying there, but she never followed up on it, so he figured she didn't remember it by the morning, or else she put it down to some kind of a dream. He was pretty sure she didn't know anything, and he was happy to keep it that way, because it was bad enough dealing with the problems without worrying about her worrying about them as well. He shaved and spent his shower time thinking about what to wear and how to act. Truth was, he would be approaching this guy practically on his knees, a lender of last resort, his last hope, his last chance, somebody who held the whole of his future in the palm of his hand. So how to approach such a guy? Not on his knees. That was not how the game of business is played. If you look like you really need a loan, you don't get it. You only get it if you look like you don't really need it. Like it's a matter of very little consequence to you. Like it's a 50-50 decision whether you even allow the guy to climb on board with you and share a little wedge of the big exciting profits just around the next corner. Like your biggest problem is deciding exactly whose loan offer you're even going to consider. A white shirt, for sure. And a quiet tie. But which suit? The Italians were maybe too flashy, not the Armani. He had to look like a serious man, rich enough to buy a dozen Armanis, for sure, but somehow too serious to consider doing that. Too serious and too preoccupied with weighty affairs to spend time shopping on Madison Avenue. He decided heritage was the feature to promote. An unbroken three-generation heritage of business success may be reflected in a dynastic approach to dressing. Like his grandfather had taken his father to his tailor and introduced him, then his father had taken him in turn. Then he thought about his Brooks Brothers suit. Old but nice, a quiet check, vented, slightly warm for June. Would Brooks Brothers be a clever double bluff, like saying I'm so rich and successful it really doesn't matter to me what I wear? Or would he look like a loser? He pulled it off the rack and held it against his body. Classic, but dowdy. He'd look like a loser. He put it back. Tried the gray Savile Row from London. Perfect. It made him look like a gentleman of substance. Wise, tasteful, infinitely trustworthy. He selected a tie with just a hint of pattern and a pair of solid black shoes, put it all on and twisted left and right in front of the mirror. Couldn't be better. Looking like that, he might almost trust himself. He finished his coffee, dabbed his lips, and slipped through to the garage. Fired up the Benz and was on an uncongested Merritt Parkway by 6:45. Reacher spent 50 minutes on the ground in Atlanta, then took off again and swung east and north towards New York. The sun was up out over the Atlantic and was coming in through the right-hand windows with the freezing brightness of high-altitude dawn. He was drinking coffee. The stewardess had offered him water, but he'd taken the coffee instead. It was thick and strong, and he was drinking it black. He was using it to fuel his brain, trying to figure out who the hell Mrs. Jacob could be and why she had paid Costello to scour the country for him. They stacked up over LaGuardia. Reacher loved that. Low, lazy circles over Manhattan in the bright morning sun, like a million movies without the soundtrack. The plane rocking and tilting, the tall buildings sliding by under them, tinted gold by the sun, the Twin Towers, the Empire State Building, the Chrysler, his favorite, City Corps. Then they were looping around and driving for the North Shore of Queens and landing. The buildings of Midtown across the river raked past the tiny windows as they turned to taxi into the terminal.